I wanted to ask you, actually, about the differences that kids experience in teaching, in learning history in deprived schools, schools in deprived areas, and in comfortable areas.
Okay.
Because you were speaking about, I think, quite sophisticated things, like the Technology Initiative. That would work probably very well in a school where the kids are open-minded, articulate, coming from homes where things are discussed.
Yeah.
And opinions are handed back.
Absolutely.
Whereas kids who are coming from homes with a much restricted vocabulary, where things are laid down and they, you know, they don't question. What's the challenge with that?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think there. In terms of my schools, I think two of my best three are in comfortable zones. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
But the teachers are not just sitting and talking, and the pupils are not just well behaved and writing notes. Mm. But the teachers, because of the behaviours of those young people, take huge risks.
Yeah.
So I went to do a lesson recently, and the children came in. It was year nine, good school, all right, very good in terms of exam results. And the children came in, and they know I'm there, obviously. This is a prepared lesson, because I'm there.
Yeah.
And they're faced by a sixth former girl, ironing. Ironing a shirt. And a man in a very tall top hat, watching her doing it. And the kids came in, and immediately, they were perplexed. And the teacher made the boy sit on one side, and the girl sit on the other side. And then these two people came out of role and went to their two sides and started haranguing these girls for getting uppity and getting out of their place. That was the girl. And, you know, you're here, you're a mother, you know, this is the job to do. You shouldn't be going out to work. And the man praising the men, the fighters and all the rest. And then we led into the role of women within the early part of the 20th century. And stunning. And those young people were... The girls especially were incensed, and they wanted, you know, and they wanted to find the evidence to put forward what it is that was actually going through their mind. Now, any teacher could have done that, but of course the relationships matter crucially here. But that school could have got away with, open page 24, let's have a look at this source, what's it telling us, let's write some notes. And those children would have followed, and they would have been well behaved, and they would have learnt, and they would have passed their exams. But that department was saying, yeah, they're going to do that anyway, so let's engage with that. You have then a conversation with the young people, and this isn't a one-off.
Mm.
This isn't, no. You know, they're used to this. So they pass round another lesson I saw, and there were 7-8 boxes with a lid on, and they had to pass it round, and they had to make sense of what it is they're going to study today based upon this. And one of them would have a teapot, just an empty teapot, and they pass it on. And another one would have something else. And slowly it dawns on them, actually, they're all got to do with sugar and tobacco and cotton.
So that's the empire.
And we're moving into the empire and the slave trade.
Yeah.
You know, and clever ways to challenge their thinking. Now, I see that in other schools as well. But in the socially more adept schools where the children have got the language, they've got the culture of how to behave in certain settings, it allows the teacher, should they be so willing, to actually to engage with that. Now it's fascinating, in the three schools I'm thinking of at the moment, the historians are all doing that and the geographers are doing the reverse. The geographers are teaching them. And they're in their place, and they're all facing the same way.
So they're sticking with very conventional
approaches. Very much so, and the kids are conforming to it because they know what they're going to get out of it is a good exam result and go off to university. But there isn't that love, there isn't that wow factor. Now that's what I'm noticing. That isn't answering your question, though, about the less they, you know, the less well-off places, because there you get a variety as well. But it can be no coincidence, can it, that the three most exciting history departments are all, actually, in areas of middle-class backgrounds.
Yeah. Do you think that's partly because schools that have good reputations attract very well qualified and exciting staff?
They attract and they appoint.
Yeah.
They choose the right people for the job. There's one in particular I'm thinking of, and it is very traditional, and it has like a grammar school feel to it, but some of that learning that I was talking about took place in that school.
Presumably the teachers in that school are still doing the solid work of getting kids to write in extended form and all that sort of thing.
But when you talk to the young people, because we do that as part, we do pupil voice work all the time when we're in the schools now, they will tell us quite quickly whether in fact that was a one-off experience which they'd never had before. I had that recently up at in Derwent Side, where the children were doing some work, and it was around group work, and it was fascinating. The teacher had prepared six of them on a theme on the First World War. So one had got really up to date with trench foot, and another one had got really up to date with censorship of the post, and another one, and he made sure that those eight children really knew their stuff, and they'd done it for homework under his guidance. And then they came in, and their job was to take four of their mates and actually teach them. And it was really good, but the children were perplexed, the children were confused, the children weren't sure, and it only took us 30 seconds in terms of, this is great, this, have you done this before? No, I've never done this before. Compare this with the way you normally teach. Is this better? Oh, this is much better. Right? So if I was a teacher taking a huge risk, because I think they know what they should be doing, but sometimes they don't want to take... And I praise them in the end, because they took a risk when I was there, rather than take a risk when they just got it to themselves, you know.
Oh, it takes a lot of preparation, doesn't it?
It does.
But when you go to the secondary schools that are in Shildon and Consett,
yes,
and places like that...
Yeah.
What are the sort of challenges that history teachers and geography teachers are facing there, and how do they meet them?
The challenge is not in pupil behaviours.
Because they're very good schools in the terms that they control them, or?
I've seen, 300 lessons over the last 3 years? And I've seen 5 where the behaviours were unacceptable.
Nice.
That's all.
Very good, isn't it?
That's all.
Yeah.
That's history and geography. No, it is not behaviours. It may well be in terms of preparation. It may well be that they're doing too many things too similar. So as a result of that, the behaviours then deteriorate. But they don't start with the bad behaviours, you know. But I've seen teachers who talk down, and the class, you can see them physically sink, you know, because they're not being inspired, they're not being challenged, and they just, we'll do this, then we'll write this, we'll do this, then we'll write that, and they're just being spoon-fed all the time. You can get that in any school, I think.
Do you think that kids from, you know, working class homes where there's little experience of the world large, that it's harder to inspire them with history and geography because it's so unfamiliar to them? You know, the topics are so outside their knowledge and experience, they dismiss them as irrelevant to them.
No, I don't see that. I honestly don't see that. So whatever topic is actually the focus of the lesson, I think they've been very clever. Let's say, I've got about 4 or 5 schools who do Jack the Ripper as an option in year 9 now. It started as an option in year 10 and 11, and it worked, and then when they changed the boards and it doesn't fit, they brought it down to year 11. So they're choosing topics which can grab their interest.
Yes,
in the same way as we would have done The Body in the Bog 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Because, wow, that grabs their imagination. So you've got that going on all the time.
But you've got some topics in the national curriculum that children might find really alien. I mean, we mentioned the Aztecs.
Yes.
Because in India and the Empire, that would also be very far from their experience and understanding. So how do teachers deal with that?
Right. I mean, I've seen one recently where they do the Islam work in year 7. They have a whole module on Islam. And I questioned why they were doing it and so on, because they've kept it from what they've been doing over the last 4 or 5 years. And the person who was head of the department wrote the textbook for it and so on. So, I mean, I can see where it's coming from originally. But their argument was quite clear, that there's enough going on in the world today for those children to make links with whatever topic, such as Islam, that they were doing.
Yeah.
And making sense of it in the context of every person on this planet has a history, and let's have a look at somebody else's history, and let's see how it relates to our history. No, I really don't get the impression that it's because it's out of our sink. I suppose we do bend it, though, don't we? We do we do the Industrial Revolution, that goes down very well, but we choose coal mining disasters as the way in, because we've got so many here in the Northeast.
Well, that makes sense.
We certainly have that done. Maybe the Industrial Revolution doesn't get the look that it gets in Suffolk.
No, it was harder to teach there.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, actually, if being sort of near the borders, teachers put in that little bit of Scottish and Welsh history that they should do now, because in the revised curriculum it's supposed to be there.
That's right. No, they don't. No. And often what you get is this, well, let's give a nod to the fact that we have to. And so we'll have the one lesson or the two lessons, which is around the creation of the United Kingdom and so on. And that usually involves colouring in flags. No, there's no real imaginative work that I'm seeing at the moment there.
Is that something that you, as an, you know, as the advisory service, that you would think about producing something on, or, you know, helping with a training session on how to do it in a more exciting way?
Certainly one that we've got to look at. We've done others, you know, around, you know, the social context. We've tried to do it that way. You're right, it's an area that we should be looking at. Thanks, Nicola.
That's all right, that's the second one today.
You've got to see my time out, aren't you? I've only got one more year.
I've got your list of to-do.
You've filled it, exactly.
Now, one of the things that we sort of started talking about outside was you felt that geography was on its way out.
Yes.
And history's still flourishing.
Yes.
You know, apart from the differences, you say you've got more conventional geography teachers and more exciting history teachers.
Yes.
Is it simply an age thing? You've got a lot of ageing geography teachers who are nearly retired, and you've got a lot of young history teachers who are just...
No, not at all. It was that about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And we've got some really good young geographers who we've got to keep challenging their thinking processes. It really is that, I don't know whether it's through the work of Christine Council and so on, but historians actually think about the skills of history. And when you read through the language and read through the literature, that's built into all the concepts of the key processes were an integral part of history for the last 15 years. In geography, they just started to be a part of it.
Oh, right.
It really was, what are we covering? What are we, you know? And I still come back to it. If we didn't touch Australia, nobody's the worse off, you know.
Well, actually,
there are historians who would say that, mind. If we never taught the Norman invasion, we would not harm these young people, you know. But it's a part of history that we can actually bring alive, especially with our local castles and all the rest of it.
Some people, I mean, I'm thinking of the Conservative Party at the moment,
indeed,
would say there is a common cultural inheritance that all children have a right to. They have a right to know where Australia is an important part of our past. And they have a right to know about the Norman Conquest, because that's shaped what we've got today. That there are some sort of essential things that all children have got to know. What do you feel about that?
It's so obviously right, that, because, you know, otherwise how do we have this culture, this common culture?
Yeah.
We have to have a common language, we have to have a common understanding, we have to see major events in its location or in its time-space. We've got to accept that, but we haven't got to be able to see that history is a series of particular events that actually put England and the upper classes of England into a good light. It isn't about who won which battle and why we won that battle. It's more cultural than that. You know, so I can accept the fact that the Black Death, for me, a year when we lost a third of humanity?
Yeah, incredible.
Crucial, crucial time. And I wouldn't like to see a child grow up today, when we get them worried about all sorts of different things about living today, to actually understand that we came through what could have been a trigger and wiped out our species. It could have wiped us out at that time. You know, but that's just me being a passionate as a historical geographer, I think. That's where I am now, you know, and it's crucial for me. Somebody else may have an equal passion about the Raj, right? And I can accept that. But there isn't anything in particular that is a must. What's it?
It's just a different philosophical viewpoint. You're saying the passion of the teacher, the interests of the local area and of the children are preeminent. Whereas another person is saying, no, everybody has, if you like, a right to know particular things, and they are some things that we can agree on. I mean, that's another issue. How do you agree on these essential things?
Yeah.
Because I know that I've met Australians who are very upset that we don't learn anything about the history of Australia at all in this country.
Right. Yeah, sure.
There we go. That's it's not as important as the history of India in our curriculum.
That's right.
So now it's
about the Holocaust.
Yes, all the Holocaust. Yes. Going back to the, you know, is history under threat?
Yes.
Despite all this flourishing, wonderful teaching, that story you told me about the secondary school that's just appointed an RE specialist as their sole historian, that's, you know, given the cuts that have come into public sector, that's going to happen even more, isn't
it?
And then we've got the problem of the developing curriculum with the diplomas, the vocational qualifications, the emphasis on literacy and numeracy. All of them squeeze the time.
Yes, it did.
Is that happening in the schools that you're responsible
for? Very much so. And it's more, it's worse than that, I think, as well. Because schools, I mean, living today and studying today, there's much more opportunities than there were when I was in school.
Yeah.
I was with discrete subjects, taught by fanatics and passionate people and all the rest of it, but today there isn't. There's a range of ways that we can pull together and make sense of our work and prepare ourselves for the theme of work as well. There's a lot of our schools in County Durham, secondary schools, who are actually putting children onto certain pathways. In other words, saying to young people, history is a particularly literate subject, a very difficult subject, and therefore, I'm sorry, Pamela, but you can't study history, and will you please move over to travel and tourism or something like that? So I reckon about a third of young people are taken away from history by these pathways. They're nearly always now the less able. And I have a debate with my heads of history. What are you doing about it? Aren't you angry? You know, if there's a child there who has a potential to get a low GCSE but is fascinated by their past and all the rest of it, shouldn't we be fighting for that? However, you know, but the schools are making that decision.
What do the heads of history say when you say that to them?
They're saying we can't because we're not part of the decision making process. But I'm saying, you know, when I put out my letters to head teachers saying, remember, history's a fundamental right of every child, and I'm saying this as your inspector, I'm expecting you within schools to be saying the same thing. They can ignore us, but they mustn't be deaf to the message, you know. So we've now got a restricted number of kids who are actually allowed to offer history. The historians then, once they get this idea that it's not the right of all, actually want the best.
The top pupils.
So they're choosing. Okay, but with that goes something which they didn't realise, goes the fact that you have to have, therefore, the best results. I've got several history departments now whose expectation is 100% A stars disabled. There's no doubt about it. Because everyone of the children who are studying history has the potential.
Yeah.
And the schools are getting 90% A stars to C. And they're singing it from the rooftops, because in the past they would have got 40, 50% A stars to C.
Yeah.
Of course they're getting 90%, but it's actually not good enough. Because their analysis now shows that they're underachieving. So what does then a school do to a department which is underachieving? You stop children going into it. So, and we've got some schools now where the Key Stage 3 curriculum is only 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
What about six schools now where they start their options in year 8 and they start Key Stage 4 work in year 9?
Well, how do the Do they just do more subjects over the 3 years?
They spend more time on those subjects.
And does that... No. Does that improve grades?
No. It's not going to. We haven't been there. We haven't done it long enough. But it's not going to. It improves points.
Why?
Because you'll have more pupils getting more points that way.
Oh, up to C, you mean? They get up to C.
Well, if a child got an E before and you managed to get them to D, you get more points. And what we're doing is we're counting the points that the children are attaining, so we as a school look good.
Yeah.
That's not the point of education. You know, we need to get the balance right again. I've got one school, thank goodness they abandoned it. Last year, they put... Key Stage 4 was year 9, 10 and 11. And the children could study history in one of those 3 years. They could study three subjects, in those 3 years. History was one, geography was another, RE was the third.
So they did English and maths over the three years?
Yeah.
But the options were just in one year.
6 periods a week.
Yeah.
History was given it in year 9.
That's silly.
And I'm arguing, actually, some of the ideas that we're thinking about as historian, those young people haven't actually developed their thinking process as well.
No.
Anyway, they've tried it. It isn't successful. Those young people are now sitting their GCSEs this year, at the end of year 9. Then next year they'll be doing 6 periods of geography for a whole year. It's to get points. It's not about their development as a young person.
No.
Now that scares me.
Yeah.
So we've got that going on. We've got a reduction of time at Key Stage 3. And everything that I'm talking about now, Nicola, is restricting the number of geographers and historians you need.
Yeah.
So, I'm down to 36 schools, 10 who've got a single historian now.
Goodness.
And I've had my first with no historian.
So, when these specialist historians and geographers leave, retire, etc., what do they just make do with fewer staff, or are they hiring more generalist staff, you know, English teacher who can do a bit of this?
They'll have people who've got time left over from their other curriculum time.
So it's generally just a tidying up operation, reducing costs.
And that's not what the historian wants, is it?
No.
So what they fight for then is to remove that, so they actually start fighting for less time so they can teach it all.
Yes.
You see what a dilemma that we've got ourselves into? The only thing that will work is kids loving the subject and opting in, those kids getting absolutely fantastic results and more kids wanting to opt in, and then there isn't a school in this county that wouldn't employ more historians because the kids are actually getting value for money from it.
But you've just
said, a success.
You've just said to me that your historians, the specialists teaching in history in County Durham, are exciting, good, etc. So you should have a virtuous circle, shouldn't you, where more kids are coming in?
It's a balance though, isn't it? Being an exciting teacher and getting the kids thrilled by learning has to be balanced by giving them exactly what they need in order to pass the test.
Yes, yes.
And it is a balance, you know. Yeah. And I don't want one without the other in either occasion. There's no point us having great historians if they fail to get their required C in order to do history then at A level or whatever. You know, so it is getting that balance right. And I think we've got some great teachers who are allowed to do it. I also think that we've got some very stretched teachers now, single person. Who do they talk to history about? If it wasn't in Durham, would they ever meet another historian? When I did that Catholic partnership work, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, there were people there who'd never been with other historians for a whole year. How do they pull themselves together, you know?
Well, it's probably going back to how it was in the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah.
You know, when people would go for the whole career and never really talk to anyone about their professional practice.
Absolutely. That's right. But we can't allow it.
No.
We can't allow it.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. So, I've asked you about that history under threat. I can't think of anything else to ask you just at the moment.
That's okay.
Right.